Hello, everyone. It's me, your buddy Dave, the host of the Dark Stuff podcast. I'm here with episode number 105, and this, my friends, is a really special one for me. I hope it is for you too, but for me, this is a really big one because I got an opportunity to speak to one of the legends in the history of rock music and somebody who has personally meant something to me for an extremely long time, since I was a child. We're talking about Mr. Ace Frehley, the legendary lead guitarist and founding member of KISS, the Spaceman, the Space Ace, the guy from Jendel, the man who has trouble walking in on Earth's gravity. That's why he used to fall all the time on stage. No, I'm talking about KISS's former guitar player, Ace Frehley. I've been a KISS fan since as long as I can remember, since I was a child, probably going on 10 or 11 years old. Right around the early 80s is when I started getting into KISS, when I was about 10 or 11. Now, KISS fans know that wasn't necessarily the greatest period for KISS, but when you're a kid, you don't know these things, right? You just you get interested, and all of a sudden you're interested. I mean, what are you supposed to do? You don't have that kind of level of critical thinking music-wise when you're 11 years old. But I digress. This interview with Ace is really important to me because of all of the things I said. Let me give you a little setup on this. I've been a KISS fan for a long time, so much so that in the mid-80s, I even had my own KISS fanzine. This would have been around the Animalize, Asylum, Crazy Nights period for a couple years. I published a bi-monthly little newsletter, and I'd make an annual review booklet, send them out to the few people who actually paid for it. And I was able to meet the 80s version of KISS, the version with Paul Stanley, Gene Simmons, Eric Carr, and Bruce Kulick on a number of occasions throughout the 80s. I did a phone interview with Vinnie Vincent at one time, but I never was able to talk to or meet the other original members of the band, namely Peter Criss and Ace Frehley. Now, as of this recording, which is in May of 2014 that I'm talking to you, I still have never met Peter Criss, and I've never met Ace in person, but I did get a chance to talk to him on the telephone. And this wasn't even the first time I had a chance to talk to him on the phone. I got a great story about in the mid-80s when I did that KISS fanzine, I really wanted to talk to Ace. And I found out that his mother's phone number was listed. She was from Bronx, New York. She's now deceased, but in the 80s she was still alive, obviously. And her phone number was listed. I looked it up. I gave her a call. I told her who I was. I was a big KISS fan, a big Ace fan. And we started having conversations. We became kind of friendly a little bit. I probably spoke to her 4 or 5 times. Conversations were 15, 20 minutes or so, mostly about Ace, things she liked about Ace's music, and wanted to tell me stories about him and things like that. And I think, as a gesture, to be nice, she set up a thing where she was going to have Ace give me a call. But she didn't tell me about it. So when it happened, someday during a summertime, I know I went to the club where we went swimming. I went up to the pool. I did some swimming. I came home. My dad tells me, "Oh, you missed a phone call. Someone calling themselves Ace Frehley gave you a call and wanted to say hello." And of course, I didn't believe it. That sounded like bullshit to me. I mean, why would Ace be calling me? I'm a 14, 15-year-old kid. Why is he calling me? So I decided to put my little theory to the test because I knew my dad wouldn't know if it really was Ace. He wouldn't recognize the voice, and he wouldn't know, you know, he doesn't know much about them. He doesn't know what they look like, etc. So I put on a videotape interview with KISS with all four members of the original band, and I said, when you hear the guy talking who you spoke with on the phone today, point him out. And I put on the interview, and as soon as Ace started speaking, my dad said, "That's the guy." And so I believe that Ace did actually call my house, but this, of course, was the days before caller ID, things like that. There was no Star 69 or any of that nonsense. So basically, since he didn't leave a number, I was never able to call him back, and I was never able to speak with him. Flash forward, of course, to 2009, and I get the opportunity to speak to Ace. For those of you who don't know, I host a weekly radio show in the Omaha metro area called New Day Rising. Now, the show does stream, and you can get it on places like TuneIn Radio. The station is KIWR, or the call letters, 89.7 The River is the sort of the tagline. I'm on every Sunday from 2 to 5. I got a call asking if I was interested in interviewing Ace Frehley in his tour support for the album Anomaly, which was his first solo album in 20 years. He was out of Kiss for a number of years, and this was his first solo album since 1989's Trouble Walkin'. So I was not going to miss an opportunity to talk to Ace Frehley. So I made the arrangements. We set the time. I went down to the studio. I recorded the phone call. I did my interview with Ace. It went really well. I was very happy with it at the end. I didn't get a chance to use it on my show for a number of reasons. One, my particular show is more of an indie music show, and Kiss is generally not covered. I don't play Kiss. It's not like I'm prohibited, but it's just it's a completely different world than the Ace Frehley world, and I just didn't think it would necessarily go over. Also, I thought, you know, the show was playing in a club at the casino. It would be packed anyways, and, you know, my promotion probably wouldn't have done much in terms of the show. So I just kind of held on to the interview. I saved it, and I thought, I'll definitely find some way to use this in the future. And, well, here we are. The future is now. His Anomaly tour kicked off in Council Bluffs, Iowa, which, as many of you know, is right next to Omaha. It's considered part of the Omaha metro area. And that was sort of what we talked about. I didn't want to pepper Ace with obscure Kiss questions, you know, like, what kind of guitar did you use on the guitar solo to Got to Choose during the Hotter Than Hell sessions or whatever, because I knew he wasn't going to know that type of detail. He wasn't going to remember. Ace partied for decades, so of course it's not exactly instant recall for him, and that's okay. We started off talking about the Anomaly album, and eventually I got him to talk about other things besides the new record, but I didn't want to approach this from a fan's perspective. I wanted to approach this as a serious interviewer and asking him some questions that would relate to other people who aren't just, you know, just really hyper Kiss fans who know every single detail about everything, probably better than Ace himself does. So I want you to know that going into the interview. Ace now has a new album coming out. It'll be out June 24th of 2014. It's called Space Invaders, and that will be his follow-up to Anomaly, which is great because it only took him just a couple of years, 5 years, whereas there was 20 years in between his last solo album, so glad to see him sticking to it here. Really, there's not much else I can say at this point. This is me kind of living out a dream. I'm getting to talk to somebody that I've liked since I was 10 years old. I'm 43 now, so it's been a long time that I've been liking this guy. I still get a kick out of listening to the interview, and regardless of the circumstances, I love this, the fact that I got this opportunity. I hope you enjoy this. This is the Dark Stuff Podcast and my interview with Mr. Ace Frehley.
Hey, this is Eddie Spaghetti from the greatest rock and roll band in the world, the Super Suckers.
Hey, this is Joe from the Mises.
This is Adam Franklin from Swerve Driver.
This is Artie Lang from the Howard Stern Show.
Hey, this is John from the Fag.
Hey, this is Rick Kubik, drummer from Natarose.
This is Josh Hayden from Spain.
Matt Sharp from the Rentals, and you are listening to...
And you're listening to the Dark Stuff Podcast.
And you're listening to the Dark Stuff Podcast.
The Dark Stuff Podcast.
Ace Frehley! Hey, Dave.
Hey, how you doing, Ace?
Great.
All right. Thank you very much for taking the time to do this interview with me. I appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure.
All right. It's been a long time I've been wanting to talk to you, but don't worry. I'm not going to pester you with really obscure Kiss questions. I'll keep it to the new stuff, you know.
No problem.
All right. Well, I figured we'd talk a little bit about the new record and the tour and stuff, and then maybe I'll get into some older questions and just some kind of miscellaneous stuff.
Sure.
All right. Now, the new record, Anomaly... It's your first record in 20 years, first solo record in 20 years.
Yeah.
And it kicks off with a track called Foxy and Free, which I got to tell you is probably like the heaviest riff I've heard you record in all the years I've been listening to your music. Were you trying to make some type of statement with such a heavy opener?
I don't know. I had the music for that kicking around for years, and then, you know, I put lyrics to it.
Yeah. So nothing real. I mean, not like, hey, this is my first record in 20 years. I'm going to really hit them hard with that first track or anything like that.
Yeah, well, that too. Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously when you finish mixing all, when I finish mixing all the songs, I was just kicking around all different types of, orders, you know, song order. And basically, you know, that one kept ringing true as an opening track.
Yeah, well, that's definitely a good call. It's a great opening track. Now, how you've been making records now and recording for over 30 years. How has your writing process changed over the years?
My writing process?
Yeah.
It hasn't changed at all.
No?
You know, unlike some people, I don't have any type of formula that I use. You know, sometimes I'll start off with a guitar riff and add lyrics. Sometimes I'll come up with a lyric idea and add music to it. Sometimes I'll just be tinkering around on my acoustic guitar and, play something kind of folky and then do an electric guitar track over it and then add words or vice, you know. There's no set formula that I use to writing songs or where I get my ideas from.
Now,
I get it from classical songs, jazz, blues, whatever, you know.
Are you the type of guy that can just set aside a time to write, or do you need sort of the inspiration to hit you first?
I never set aside time to write.
You just, whenever it hits you, you just do it.
You know, usually I'll pick up a guitar when I'm not doing anything, and immediately something just starts happening. And I always carry little digital recorders around with me.
Oh, that's good. Always prepared.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotta be.
Yeah. Now, is making records these days, is it easier or harder after all this time?
It's easier.
Easier.
It's a lot easier because of all the knowledge I've accumulated over the years. I know the process of recording, you know, really well now because I've worked with some great producers and, you know, the amount of albums I play on, basically, you know, I know what I want and I know how to get it.
Excellent.
I don't have to think too hard about where I need to go, you know.
Right, right.
I'm familiar with the process. And now this new album is the first album I did totally digital. And pretty much...
That's with, like, the Pro Tools stuff?
Yeah. Pretty much I got Pro Tools down now. You know, I've had it for years, but I never really mastered it. You know, but working with Marty Fredrickson and Anthony Fox, I learned so much.
Now, is that the... when you record at your home studio, is that the same studio you had back in the day, like your old home studio, right after you left Kiss, or is this a different studio that you work at now?
You mean when I left KISS in 2000?
No, the old days. Talking like 80, 81, like that studio.
No, that was a different studio.
A different studio.
That's what we recorded the Elder there. That was up in Connecticut. This one, my new studio's in Westchester, New York.
Oh, okay.
And it's just a big converted house into a studio.
Now, is it something that only you use, or do you let other artists, any other artists recorded in the studio?
I'm the only one that's recorded there. Pretty much, it's but it's going to probably be, you know, the East Coast base for Bronx Born Records.
Okay.
My new label, and eventually, I'm probably going to want to produce other bands out of there that are on my label, and so on and so forth.
Well, that brings me up to the next question here. You did put out the new record on your label, like you said, Bronx Born. Now, why did you decide to go the independent route? And do you think that the traditional music industry, the way it existed, is over?
It's definitely over. The internet has changed everything, not only the music industry, but the way everybody does business. So, you know, there's no going back. It's just, you know, figuring out what's the best way to go about it, you know?
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the labels, you know, have folded over the years. Record stores are closing left and right. And, I spoke to a lot of different people. I mean, I even remember calling Paul Stanley, after he put his solo album out, you know, and he said, hey, don't go with a big label, you know.
Yeah.
Better off doing it yourself. And, I did some research, you know. I hooked up with Rocket Science, you know, great marketing team. You know, they've just done a great job, you know, promoting the record and coordinating stuff. And
Now, Bronx Born is not just going to be a label for you, like you just suggested. You're going to work on some other artists as well?
Eventually, sure, when I have time. You know, right now I'm tied up with a world tour, which will probably go through the rest of this year in 2010. You know, but, you know, time allowing, sure.
Excellent. Well, now, a lot has been made over the last couple of years about you're getting sober for the first time in a long time. And I'm wondering how your sobriety has affected your writing and your playing, because I did notice on a couple of tracks on the new record, like Change the World and Little Below the Angels, there is a little bit more of a serious tone on some of those tunes.
Yeah.
So well, is that due to that, or is just sort of just the general?
Know. Maybe I'm growing up. You know, maybe I'm just, you know, exploring different musical avenues.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, A Little Below the Angels is kind of autobiographical.
Right.
About, you know, some of my struggles. But, you know, I mean, I'm able to focus a lot better now. I think I'm writing and playing better and singing better and looking better, you know?
Yeah. No, I've seen some recent pictures, Ace. You're looking great.
Thank you.
Now, how much of this new record was written before the Kiss reunion and then shelved, and how much of it was since you left the band again in whenever 2001, 2002?
Most of it was written after.
Was written after. Okay.
Yeah.
So, because you, from what I understand, you were working on some stuff prior to the reunion. Did that stuff just get pushed aside, or you're not going to work with that anymore, or could you maybe come back to that at a later time?
I mean, you know, Sister was written prior. You know, Foxy and Free, you know, some of the music was written before, but, you know, pretty much all the other songs were written after.
Okay.
You know, except for the remake, Fox on the Run.
Now, how'd you choose that cover? Because you've done a lot of good covers over the years. You and Kiss, actually. And there's so many good songs to choose from. Do Ya is the one that comes to mind. The was that ELO or The Move or something? I can't remember who did that one first. But how did you choose Fox on the Run?
Oh, Fox on the Run, you know, a good friend of mine, Pam, came up with that idea. And we just ran with it. That was actually the last track we recorded. We actually recorded that out in L.A. I flew out to L.A. to mix the album and actually took a day off mixing to track that in Marty Fredrickson's studio. And that's the only track he produced on the album.
Oh, okay. And the rest of it, you're credited as the producer. Now, did you consider working with someone that you'd worked with before, like an Eddie Kramer type of guy, or were you always set on, I'm going to do it myself for this new record?
Well, you know, I did this record, on my own time and, you know, over such a long period of time, it was really hard to find a producer that was willing to work, you know, crazy hours and, you know, on and off. You know, most producers who sign onto a project want to take it from its, you know, beginning to, you know, its end. And, unfortunately, I wasn't working that way because I didn't have all the songs ready when I first started tracking. And, you know, it was a long, tedious process. And, you know, I really couldn't find a producer that was willing to work, you know, in that capacity.
Right. Well, that makes sense. Now, let's jump to the tour. I understand you're kicking off the tour this Thursday here in Omaha / Council Bluffs.
Yeah.
Now, for those of us, there are plenty of people that saw the show 2 years ago when you were there. Mm-hmm. Now, how is the show different this time than it was 2 years ago? Do you have the same band that you're playing with? And what are we going to see in the set that's different?
It's the same lineup. There's going to be some new songs, obviously, added, you know, new songs off Anomaly, you know, and probably one or two new songs that, you know, weren't performed the last time we were there.
Any hints?
No hints.
No hints? Okay.
Don't want to give anything away.
All right. Now, since you have so many songs over the years, how do you approach picking what songs you're going to use on the tour?
You know, I try to get feedback from people whose opinion I trust and fans, you know. And, you know, when I ask fans questions like that and, you know, I keep getting the same, you know, answer, you know, then usually I go with that, you know.
Yeah. Like Hard Times off Dynasty or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. Now, we'll jump off to some different topics here. Now, at the time that you got back with Kiss back in the 90s, you know, everyone was talking about how great it was. Oh, we're just like the old days where everyone's getting along. Was that actually true? And how long was it before it was pretty much like it was at the late 70s when everybody was not getting along really well?
Well, I mean, you know, we got along. It just, you know, when you're a co-founder of a band, and then, you know, you go back to do one tour, and then, you know, they want to extend it, and then, you know, you get involved in a situation where you're not really in control of your destiny and other people are making decisions for you. You know, it's really not the ideal situation, so I had to move on with my career.
Yeah. That same goes for Peter, you think?
Well, you'll have to ask Peter that question.
Well, we'll see if I ever talk to the guy. We'll find out. Now, the track you wrote, Into the Void, that was on the Psycho Circus record, mm-hmm. Was that something that you wrote specifically for Kiss for that record, or did you have that already sort of in the pocket there?
Well, I had a group of songs that I submitted, but, you know, they were all rejected. And I actually had to do a rewrite on Into the Void, you know, before, you know, they would take it seriously. And even after I rewrote it, you know, I had to really fight tooth and nail just to get that on the record.
Well, it's so bizarre because that's easily the best track on the whole album. And it's the only one that sounds like Kiss.
Yeah, well.
That's me speaking. You know, you don't have to comment on that one if you don't want to. Now, what do you think it is about your music and the music of Kiss that is so timeless? Because as you guys get older, the fans get younger. I mean, I've been to your concerts. I've been to Kiss shows. And there are still younger and younger fans. You see all kinds of groups. From even newer groups like the Foo Fighters and whatnot, covering your stuff. What do you think it is about the music that's so timeless?
Oh, I have no idea.
No?
You know, I just make the music and hopefully people are going to like it, you know. I don't have a formula. I just do what feels right, you know.
Right. You let other people worry about that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I just came up with some different kind of fun questions here. Now, in all your years of touring, what would you say is your most Spinal Tap moment? Or have you had it?
Spinal Tap moment.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No? Well, you think about
so
that.
So many, you know. You know, when I watch that movie, I just go, yeah, well, that's really pretty much like it is a lot of the time, you know?
Yeah.
It's there's not one incident that comes to mind immediately.
Yeah, it's funny because it's true, you know?
Yeah.
Now, if you could make a dream band to play with, if anyone that's ever played music, live or dead, to back you on this current tour, who would you choose?
John Bonham on drums.
Okay.
Or Keith Moon on bass. John Entwistle.
There you go.
And on guitar with me, Hendrix.
All right, that sounds like a pretty solid band.
Yeah, you know? I think so.
Yeah, that would be really good. I'd pay money to see that group. Now, you've been friends with Anton Figg from the Letterman Band for a really long time, going back to the 70s, and he played on your solo record, your Kiss solo record. How did you guys meet, and why have you been able to work so well together? What do you think it is about the two of you that you work so well together?
Well, I mean, we connect musically, obviously, and you know, the more we work together, the easier it is to understand each other's ideas and, you know, get them down in the recording process. A lot of times, you know, I can just look at Anton and he kind of almost knows what I'm trying to say. It's so weird. We almost have mental telepathy. It's really painless and you know, working with Anton, you know, we've worked on so many projects over the years that, you know, I don't really have to explain myself. He kind of, you know, I'll play a guitar riff and he usually just kind of, you know, gets it. It's as simple as that.
Yeah. Well, that's great. I mean, now he doesn't do tours with you because of his commitment to the Letterman show, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Pretty much, okay.
I mean, like on the new album, you know, Genghis Khan, I thought was one of his best drum tracks on the record. And I really didn't have to explain much to him. I just said, you know, let's just get a heavy groove going, you know, a la John Bonham, you know?
Sure.
And, you know, he just nailed it. You know, that was like, you know, we just did a couple of takes and pieced it together, you know. That was it.
Now, fans are not going to have to wait another 20 years for a new Ace Frehley record, are they?
No. I'd say a year and a half tops.
All right, that's cool. So you're this current tour that you're on right now, how long are you going to be out?
Oh, I'll be out for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, this, you mean the Midwest tour?
Well, no, I just mean the whole thing in general. I mean, are you doing a full world tour in support of Anomaly?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I got dates in the Midwest, and then I'm heading over to Europe. Then I'm coming back and hopefully doing a few more dates in the States on the East Coast before we head over to Australia. And, you know, I was trying to put something together for Japan after Australia, and then, you know, do some festivals in Europe, hopefully next year, and a major tour in the States, hopefully.
Excellent.
We're all trying to put that together right now.
Now, the tour is kicking off in Omaha, or Council Bluffs, technically, but we call it Omaha. Any recollections from Omaha, from your past, any past appearances, anything you remember from it?
A lot of cowboys, huh?
Yeah.
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 Big cowboys.
Big cowboys. There you go. Yeah. That works.
It was, in fact, I remember going to a cowboy bar one night with a bunch of my bodyguards in the early KISS days.
Yeah.
And they were big bodyguards. And I'll never forget, I remember going to this bar and the body, you know, the bouncers there were a lot bigger than my bodyguards.
Yeah.
They were like 6'6", 6'7". It was insane. You know, with boots and cowboy hats, forget it. They look like they're 7 feet tall.
Yeah. Well, that's it's a little different these days, so you don't have to worry about that. Now, have you been listening to anything that you like lately? I mean, what's in Ace Frehley's iPod?
You know, lately I've just been listening to old vinyl.
Oh, really?
Just kind of get back to my roots. Yeah.
Well, that works. Nothing like doing it old school.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Now, I guess this will be my last question for you, because I know you got a lot of other interviews to do today. Now, do you consider yourself a guitar player first or a songwriter first? Or do you even think in those terms?
Well, I mean, I think of myself as a guitar player, songwriter, producer, and, you know, I think of myself as a singer last.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I you know, to me, singing is, I do it because I have to do it.
Right.
You know, because I write the songs and I don't have a lead singer in my band. But, you know, singing to me is the least fun of what I do. You know, I love playing guitar and I love performing and coming up with crazy special effects for guitars and, you know, producing. You know, I mean, the singing's fine, but, you know, sometimes it becomes more of a chore than a pleasure, you know?
Sure. Now, were you pushed into singing back with KISS? Because you had a lot of songs and that you would write, and either Gene would sing it or Paul would sing it or Peter would sing it. And then finally, when it came to Shock Me, that's when you started singing your own tunes.
Well, I was never pushed into it because we had three lead singers in the band already, and everybody was, you know, rallying to sing lead. So, you know, initially I was, you know, probably a little shy about singing because, you know, I thought Paul, Gene, and Peter all had good voices. So, you know, eventually I got up enough nerve, you know, to Shock Me. And then, you know, once I got a taste of it, I wanted more.
Yeah, and there you go. And then, of course, your solo album, everyone pretty much acknowledges that was the best of the bunch.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
I got a split.
All right, well, yeah, I appreciate you taking the time, Ace, and I'll see you on Thursday.
Thank you so much. You have a great day.
All right, you too.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
And there it was. There it was, my interview with Ace Frehley. All 20 minutes of it exactly on the nose. Ace is a pro. That's how it works. When it's time to go, I got a split, and he's out of there. But, wow, I every time I listen to it, I'm glad that I got the chance. You know, it's so difficult when you're dealing with a legend who has been in the music business for 40 years to come up with questions and angles that they haven't already been approached with, you know. So obviously I'm trying to avoid the super KISS nerd angle. I don't want to do the sensational angle and just constantly talk about all of the partying and the excess and everything, and I didn't want to talk about just conflict with Kiss and all of this. So, you know, it's hard to come up with the unique angle, but I did what I could, and there you go. That's my interview. That's the end of podcast number 105. Now, moving on to the next one, number 106, coming out 1 week from today, is my interview with Annie Clark, better known as Saint Vincent. She is an emerging rock star, a really, really extremely talented artist who I've been into ever since her first album came out back in 2007. I've seen her perform now 5 times. She's absolutely fantastic. I got a chance to do an interview, an in-person interview, with Annie when she came through Omaha in April of this year. And we're going to get into it. And I think the interview is especially timely when once you hear it, you'll know, based on some of the questions, with her now appearing on Saturday Night Live and her appearance as fronting Nirvana at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So ties in pretty well. Anywho, we'll get into that next week. Thanks a lot for listening, everybody. This has been the Dark Stuff Podcast.
Transfer of data is complete.